It was lovely to meet with some of you earlier today. It's lovely to practice together, explore the Dharma together. And so this theme of releasing into love, or maybe releasing into freedom, spaciousness, ease, beauty. Maybe some of those words resonate for you more than other words. Peace. And maybe I'll start with a simile that probably many of you are familiar with. But maybe we'll look at it in a little bit of a different way in support of this idea of releasing into peace, releasing into love, beauty, freedom. So I'll to start with, so this is a story, a teaching story, a simile that the Buddha is giving to the monastics. And it goes like this. Imagine a person in the course of a journey arrives at a great expanse of water and whose near bank is dangerous and the far bank offers safety. But there is no ferry boat or bridge to take them across the water. So the person thinks, what if I collected grass and twigs and branches and leaves and bound them together and made a raft? And then, supported by the raft and by paddling with my hands and feet, I should then be able to reach the far bank. The person does this and succeeds in getting across. And on arriving at the far bank, it might occur to this person, this raft has been very helpful indeed. What if I were to hoist it on my head or load it on my shoulders and proceed on my journey? And then the Buddha says, now, what do you think? By carrying this raft, would that person be doing what should be done with a raft? No, venerable sir, say the monastics. And the Buddha continues, so what should the person do with the raft? Having arrived at the far bank, the person might think, yes, this raft has been very useful. But now I should just haul it onto dry land or release it and set it adrift on the water and then go wherever I want. In this way, the person would be doing what should be done with that raft. So there's a number of interpretations we can have for this simile that the Buddha offered. One is to consider that there's in some ways a progression, noticing that we're on a bank, on the shore, on this, wherever we are, that is dangerous in some way, or we might use the word dukkha, that has suffering and uncomfortableness, unsatisfactoriness. Many of you will recognize this as the first noble truth, just to recognize, yes, there is dukkha. And then also to notice, like, oh, over there is where there isn't dukkha, is where there's safety. It's not dangerous. On the far shore, on the other bank. You might recognize this, of course, as the third noble truth, the cessation of dukkha. And then there's working with what is available. This person that is standing on the bank, noticing the dukkha, They look around, and what do they see? Twigs, leaves, branches. They, using what's available, make a raft. And then they release from the shore where they are to go out on this raft across the water, paddling with hands and feet. And then they get to the other side. And then they recognize, oh yeah, I can just release this raft now. Even though it was helpful and maybe took some effort to create it, I'm going to let it go. Just let it here. Either heave it onto dry land. Maybe it'll be useful later. So, or just set it adrift on the water and let rafts do whatever it is that rafts do without worrying about it or thinking about it. So some doing, some creating rafts, so to speak, and noticing dukkha. But also noticing that, or feeling into, like, it just doesn't make sense really to carry this raft around. So it just, without maybe a lot of thought, just putting it down. Of course, it seems kind of silly if we were to say, yeah, let's put this on this raft on our head and walk around, right? So it's just natural to kind of put it down for a releasing of the raft to happen. And we might consider that in some way, all of our practices come down to, in the end, this release. We might say, as Nikki said last night, that Nibbana is a thorough releasing, is a complete releasing, a releasing in such a way that there's nothing left to release and nobody to do any releasing. And that there's lots of these little nibbanas along the way, lots of little releasing and into more freedom, releasing into peace, beauty, love. This recognition that the goal and the means are really intimately tied together. So even if nibbana or awakening isn't something that's meaningful for us or inspiring for us, this finding more freedom, just as in the simile, to be able to walk wherever they want, to recognize that some releasing happens. And to have the wisdom, the confidence, the trust that helps create the conditions that releasing might happen, to understand the value of this and the importance perhaps of creating the conditions in which releasing might happen. And this might take years of practice to unlearn a lifetime of clinging, a lifetime of craving. So much we receive the message, yes, acquire more, attain more, get more. This billion-dollar medicine avenue industry, right, that kind of promotes this. And there's so many things that we have about this. So this is where the value of practice is, to help us appreciate that more freedom and ease, peace, love arises with a release than with clinging. And one way that we might gain some of this confidence and some of this wisdom, of course, Nikki and I are talking about on the meditation cushion, but also just to notice that we naturally do this. It's just a natural process that happens in our daily life. We're letting go of plans. We're letting go of preferences, or we're letting go of views and opinions all the time. When we have more information, oh yeah, that doesn't make sense anymore. Or simple things like the weather changes. Oh yeah, I'm going to change my plans. It doesn't quite make sense anymore either. Or maybe our priorities change. We have to take care of ourselves, or we have to take care of others that we didn't have to before. So we're always letting go, making changes. It's a natural process. And we might have new perspectives and new understandings that just allows this to happen. We might find ourselves on another shore, so to speak, and realize, oh yeah, it just doesn't make sense anymore to be clinging or to carrying this, whatever it is it might that we're clinging to. So just in the same way that we not might notice that we're doing this in our daily life, we notice this in our meditation practice, our Buddhist practice, our spiritual practice, that a relinquishment, a releasing, a letting go of this underlying compulsion to cling, this underlying drive to hold on to, grip our desires, our views. So not just the desires and views themselves, but the clinging to them. And then so much of practice is to create the conditions so that this clinging just doesn't make sense anymore. So then releasing just naturally happens. So maybe like to highlight that what is being released is the clinging. And sometimes if we understand that what's being released is clinging, we can appreciate the value of not gripping and not holding on, not to our thoughts or ideas, opinions, as well as actual objects. And some of you maybe have seen this this imagery, but this is one that I appreciate very much. And that is, there's a number of different ways we might hold an object, a view, an opinion. And if we find ourselves gripping, there can be a way in which we let go of the object. So we no longer have the object. There's a releasing happens. For those of you who aren't watching on Zoom, I'm holding a striker in my hand. I'm holding it tightly, and then I open my hand and the striker just falls. But there's also another way in which we can be holding something, and now we just open our hand and the striker is still in the palm of my hand, but I'm no longer gripping it. So to release the gripping, the clinging. Because to be sure, there are some objects, some rafts that are useful and helpful. And so we're letting go of the clinging. And it might be a time that we don't need, in this case, a striker anymore, and we put it down. But part of the practice is to recognize what is helpful, what isn't helpful, what's beneficial, not beneficial, what's wholesome, what's not wholesome. And so we can recognize, is it time to let go of the object, whether it's an actual possession or whether it's a view or a thought or an idea? When is it appropriate to let go of that? Or when is it appropriate just to let go of the clinging while still allowing the object? Some things are worth holding on to. They are supported. They're appropriate to have in our lives. But can we have our relationship to them be such that we're not clinging? So what are some of the conditions that we might put in place that helps us, that can support us? And something is that by the kind of the theme of this retreat we've been pointing to and suggesting, that to recognize that there can be releasing into something beautiful, to release into something beneficial, love, lovely, freedom, peace. So it's not release into a barrenness, into complete absence, but instead an emphasis on what is gained with the release of the clinging, the letting go into something that is nourishing, that is pleasant, that is can be satisfying in a way that clinging isn't. And with our deepening meditation practice, we can notice more and more subtle clinging. And we can also notice more and more beautiful, maybe lovely states of freedom, feelings of love that are available as the hindrances are released. Those things that are getting in the way of settling down, as those diminish and are released, can discover more and more of what's available on the other side of clinging. So that's one way, is to create the conditions in which releasing might happen. And Nikki's been doing this lovely job in our guided meditations to bring our attention to this releasing, something that's naturally happening, but often we're not paying attention. It's a little bit more difficult to pay attention to an absence. And sometimes we just don't notice. We go back to the next, object to land our attention on. We tend to be dismissive of the absences, or just not even notice them. And not only to notice the absence, but also to notice what goes along with it. And it might be really subtle, and it might be just fleeting. This love, this openness, spaciousness, peace, ease. And so the Buddha talked about some other ways, maybe looking at it from a little bit different perspective, same things from a different perspective. And he talked about this as part of his own process as he was finding his way to awakening. And that is, he talks about the gratification, the drawback, and the escape of his experience. So the gratification, starting with what is most obvious, our experience in the world does provide some degree of gratification, enjoyment, pleasure, satisfaction. Of course it does. We wouldn't be clinging on to things if they didn't. It was only dukkha, dukkha, dukkha. So just to recognize that it's because we do sometimes experience gratification as this general word of some certain amount of satisfaction, that we become attached to things and they serve us. There's reasons why we are building rafts to get to the other side, right? But when we look more closely, however, and this is what a meditation practice allows us to do, we discover that there's a dark underbelly, if you will, of these things that are providing some gratification. And this drawback of everything is that they are changing. They are impermanent. if they were always there in exactly the way that is satisfying, there would not be any problems. But they're changing. They're impermanent. They end. They are inconstant. There's this liability to suffering that they can slide into addictions, compulsions. I have to have this to be happy. And kind of like dismissing everything else that also might provide some comfort or happiness. No, I have to have this. So this kind of shrinking of our possibilities, the way we think of what's available or what's going to bring some ease. And so the Buddha and his teachings actually does a lot of emphasizing the drawbacks of objects. A lot of the teachings are about the dangers of getting attached to sensual pleasures or the dangers of clinging to anything. Because it's natural that we want, because they do provide a certain amount of satisfaction and pleasure, and it's natural to want to cling. So a lot of the teachings are to draw our attention to the suffering, to the dukkha. And maybe it might feel, when you first come to the teachings, I know some people have said, well, it feels kind of pessimistic. But that pessimism is to point us towards liberation, to let us know that there is a greater freedom. There's a greater ease, a greater satisfaction that's available. And to recognize the drawbacks is what helps makes it natural that just releasing will happen. So seeing in some new way, seeing an object in some new way, in some radical way, to see that impermanent and constant nature of everything, and that all the ideas and concepts that we live by are just that, ideas, concepts. And to notice the unsatisfactoriness, the stressfulness, the dukkha, the suffering, the dissatisfaction that's integrated or enmeshed in the very way that we see, hear, and interact with the world. And then if this release has been deep enough, where the letting go has been deep enough, then whatever we were clinging to or the attachments might come back. But now things are different. Now we know something that we didn't know before. Now we have this experience of, oh, this is what it feels like to have let go of, to have this being released, whatever it might be, an object, a relationship, an idea. And we also know, we understand something about ourselves. We're like, release, letting go, relinquishment is possible. And we gain some confidence. We recognize, yeah, this direction, this releasing into love, releasing into peace, releasing into freedom, this is the direction to go, not the direction of clinging. So the Buddha was talking about gratification, drawbacks, and then kind of use this word escape. This word escape, nisarana in Pali, could also be translated as to leave behind. To, when we see that our craving for pleasure binds us to what is inherently unsatisfactory in some kind of way, we can stop the craving, the clinging. And then we just leave it behind. just like a raft when it's no longer useful. We just leave it behind. So here's the Buddha sharing that how he worked with this in his practice. Mendicants, before my awakening, when I was still unawakened but intent on awakening, I thought, what's the gratification in the world? What's the drawback? What's the escape? Then it occurred to me, the pleasure and happiness that arise from the world, this is its gratification. That the world is impermanent, suffering, and perishable, this is its drawback. Removing and giving up desire and greed for the world, this is its escape. As long as I didn't truly understand the world's gratification, drawback, and escape, in this way, for what they are, I didn't announce my supreme perfect awakening. But when I did truly understand the world's gratification, drawback, and escape in this way for what they are, then I announced my supreme perfect awakening in this world. So it was through this understanding. Yes, there is some pleasure, gratification. Nowhere does the Buddha say that we have to get rid of all of our possessions, that we shouldn't have any wealth. Yes, there was a big monastic tradition, and the monastics did that, but there's no requirement to become a monastic. And there's even suttas for the lay people of how to preserve one's wealth, how to use one's wealth. So that can be for the benefit for oneself and others, and how to take care of others with this. But the big part of the practice is to understand the drawbacks and then the release that's possible. Part of creating the conditions is just acknowledging some of the unsatisfactoriness of what we might be holding on to. But we might feel uncomfortable with this idea of releasing or letting go. Maybe it feels too much like renunciation, or maybe it feels too much like surrender, which feels maybe a little bit like deprivation, or that we have to get rid of whatever helps us to feel safe, or maybe it feels like some sort of diminishment or some type of punishment or mortification process, or I don't know. We might be concerned that we have to relinquish our views, take up these Buddhist views or something like this. But what if we translate or retranslate this as a way of giving up? And this word is up as opposed to down. So if those of you who can't see me on Zoom, I'm bringing my hands up. To give up. That is to put up onto the altar. To make an offering. Make it an act of generosity. So this releasing is more of a sacred act that comes with a movement of the heart. So that this releasing, this letting go, this giving up, that's in the service of love, releasing into love, in the service of love. It's in the service of what is wholesome, what is virtuous, what is beneficial. So to give up, to put onto the altar. And the way that we might create this inner treasure, we might create, or maybe I should say, this inner treasure is created, or spiritual wealth is created. And to be sure, this process of releasing can be a powerful process, can be a process of purification. Sometimes it might include this clearing out of things that are uncomfortable and painful. And there can be this involuntary discharging. Maybe even some, metaphorically, like some vomiting up, like, ugh, like this, what's not needed anymore. And maybe it's not pretty and clean and beautiful. This can happen. This there's a sense of things coming up, maybe memories, or maybe some people report and movements of energy in the body, a kind of a release in that kind of way. And there might be a way, and there's a feeling of things getting disgorged even, and with a certain amount of strength. And to be sure that there's this idea of a purification. Usually we don't like to use that language, or maybe I should say I don't like to use that language, purification. It feels like there was something dirty before, and I certainly don't have that idea. But we might think of this as a kind of releasing of what's not helpful, what's not needed. But that is part of the process that can be uncomfortable. That can be, often leave a little bit of disorientation of what we've been holding on to or for so long, and maybe what we've been identified with. I'm the person who has this issue, or I'm the person that has these memories, or whatever it might be. So many different versions of this. As those kind of, the clinging to them get let go or released, it can be a little bit disorienting. So I want to talk about releasing into love, but we also don't want to have this Pollyanna idea. Oh yeah, it's just as soon as you understand things, the releasing will happen, and it's this straightforward, easy process. Maybe what I want, do you want to emphasize, is that it's a natural process. As we have greater understanding, just realize, oh yeah, this just doesn't make sense. Maybe it's not even, you know, that maybe that even sounds a little bit too intellectual, like there's a actual thinking. Does this make sense? Yes, no, no. Okay, therefore I'll put it down. Maybe in some kinds of way there is this type of an inquiry, but maybe it's just this involuntary, natural releasing that happens. I also want to say that it's a gradual process. This takes time, takes practice. Practice noticing, as I said earlier, just the more and more subtle ways in which there is clinging. It's getting comfortable with non-clinging. We shouldn't underestimate the power of our habits, our lifetime of clinging and holding on to things. So even though there might be an intellectual understanding, oh yeah, it's not helpful for me to holding on to this idea, this activity, this object, this person. It doesn't mean that we can just watch it let go, or create the conditions for releasing. It's a process. And to respect that and to honor that, we may not understand exactly how releasing happens or when it's going to happen. There's a teaching about There's a rope that's on the beach. And every day it gets with the sand, the wind, the sun, sometimes the water. At the beginning, this rope is capable of binding the boat to whatever it's tied to. But after some time, it just wears away. And we can't point to one precise moment when, oh, at this moment, that little bit wore away. Oh, and this moment, this little bit wore away. Of course we can't. The same way that our knives that we use in the kitchen get duller and duller, we can't point to the precise moment. We just finally notice, like, oh yeah, this is a dull knife. Come look at this rope on the beach and say, oh, it's disintegrated. It's no longer tying things. It's no longer binding things. So releasing into love requires a certain amount of disavowing our allegiance to things that weren't helpful, things that might not be wholesome or supportive. Of choosing maybe to no longer believe in the value of some of these things that we hold on to. Maybe to stop trusting the allure or stop trusting the promise of some of what these objects or these views or whatever it is we're clinging on to. So that then releasing can happen. And so that we might find more peace, more freedom, more love. Using this word love in this really generic way, you might understand it as non-contention. Maybe I'll read this poem that I read this morning again. Where the poet is pointing to this natural process of releasing and maybe the value of sometimes of reminding us releasing does happen and just the value of it, that letting go, seeing things, seeing the absence of things. So here's that poem again. The swirling ash doesn't try to become log again. The flying leaves don't attempt to return to the tree. The girl can't untwist her genome back into separate strands. The flower in the bread can't return to the sack, can't undo the kneading of hands. In all things lives a memory of letting go and the chance to transform into what it can't know. What do you say to that, heart? Good self, what do you say to that? Maybe we'll sit just for a few minutes here. So thank you. Thank you for your attention. Now some time for some walking meditation. And if you're able and it makes sense to you, maybe it's nice to go outside, even if it is dark outside. Sometimes if we find ourselves looking at Zoom a lot, it can be helpful to go outside. Or maybe even just looking out the window, if not actually going outside. And then we'll come back here at 7:30, so in 2.5 hours. So that we have walking meditation and then a break for a meal, those of you on this side of the continent. So see you in 2.5 hours. Thank you.